Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Niche and Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Kia ora and welcome everyone to Niche and Footy, the best place for Pacifican footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Tinirau Aruna, and alongside me each week is my koi, Sammy Wykes.
Up to Cuzzy.
It is good to be back. What a weekend we both had.
Unbelievable weekend. And I say unbelievable because it's chalk and cheese from last week. In the winner's circle, coaching, first one we won.
Oh, how good.
Yes.
How did it feel as a coach to just get that win after losing?
Not satisfied because...
Not satisfied.
Nah, because you're still pulling your hair out.
Still work to do.
Still plenty of work to do. But do you know what was satisfying? As we're walking in after a really good win, I think it was like 55 points to 19, there was an old coach I spotted in the crowd, or he spotted me in, walking into the change
rooms. Coached you.
Coached me.
Yeah.
He's a good fella too. Joe Barakat, been around the world and like sort of like a one club man with West Harbour. And... old school coach, very old school. Not like a Flano, but like that type of intensity. And we'll get to Flano in a minute anyway. But he goes, Wykesy, I can't believe you've gone to uni. No way. Like, and he was sort
Sydney
of
uni,
Sydney
the
Uni,
team
the
that you
team that coaching, because he goes, mate, you're from out west. And like, he's there laughing and like, you know, a bit of banter.
He's calling you a sellout.
He is. But the satisfying moment was the boys started singing the team song. And he's still going, talking to me about this. I was like, sorry, mate. I've got to go sing the winning song. See you later. So, and he goes, oh, that's awesome.
Nah,
good to see you. So, yep, now in the winner's circle.
Great
very
to
happy.
See that you walked in with a smile on your face. But yeah. We do have a big show here on Niche and Footy Mondays.
Rugby League, it just keeps delivering with all the news.
We've already,
we've lost
one already, and yeah. Now we're about to lose another.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
We've lost another, sorry.
Lost another. So that's happening, obviously, with the results. Super Rugby Pacific wrapped up. That's in the books. Andrew, unbelievable win down in Canberra. But our guest, you knew this person. Every time I ask you about a union guest, something's like, bro, who's that? I've got to do a quick bit of research. But this time around... you knew who this man was. Do the honours, please.
We did have this interview last Friday. We got to pre-record it because this man is currently in Japan.
He's in Japan coaching.
And he is none other than the great PNG rugby union legend, Will Guinea. He is joining us today on our show. Now,
this is a get.
This interview,
a big get for
this
us.
Chat that we had, if you need some kind of motivation to get up and... get moving or just that healthier lifestyle, this is the chat for
and
you.
And on top of that, if you're banging on the door around, I'm nearly there, but I'm not quite there, I feel like I'm being overlooked for teams, and you need that motivation to take that one more step, to go again, to show up, this is the chat for you, because Willie Genya wasn't the next big thing when he came through.
He was brought up in the village, in the villages of Papua New Guinea, and didn't even know what rugby union was.
Dreamt of being a cricketer. So there you have it. And becomes one of the greatest ever halfbacks of all time in rugby union. So make sure you hang around for that chat.
Moment of the week.
Samuel, we spoke about your coaching, but I know you
sorry,
also,
I jumped the gun there. That's how excited I was. I didn't want to save it for moment of the week. I just wanted to get in there.
You get straight in there. I actually got to coach my son's team or co-coach and run the water on.
Round one. For the kids' competition.
Yeah, for my kids' competition. Under 16, St. Clair Comets, we got up. And then I ended up playing yesterday on the Sunday again for the same rugby league club, St. Clair Comets. They should be paying me for how much I promote this club.
I think they are. But anyway, you wouldn't be there if you weren't.
But yes, we won our A-grade.
You sound a bit like Nemsy, I think.
Our A-grade competition, we end up winning another 80 minutes from your finest, and the body, the shoulders, the neck, the
legs.
You can
see a little scratch on there.
Feeling
on
sore
the neck.
Today, yeah. A bit of pushing and shoving from the other team, but hey, all love after. So okay. We're now 3 from 3.
Perfect.
And I've seen you got busy. Oh, you
one
got a question for me?
One question. Okay, so you coach your boys. That's why you are doing the under-16s, your twin boys. Did they ride in the front seat or were they in the back seat? Oh, obviously, they both can't sit in the front because, you know, if you ride up the front, you might be in trouble with their game, with their performance, that talking to. So everyone tries to get to the back seat. How were they after the game?
No, they were good. They were happy with
so you were
it's
happy
their, it's their first jump into Div 1 and being surrounded by Div 1 players as well. So more so we reflect, we review, and then we're like, all right, what do we got to do better next week? And then we get to work.
Oh, times
tomorrow.
Have changed, eh? Yeah, from the old dad chats in the front seat of the car after a performance.
No. Well, I'm all about reviewing, and then we get better.
We get back to work, mate. The modern day coach. Maybe that is a secret for all the coaches out there. Learn how to connect.
G'day, everyone. My name's Kael Edo, and you're listening to Nijin Footy.
Yes, Kael Edo, one of the greats, the Cook Island greats, and playing some good footy for the Cronulla Sharks. But huge news today that has been released from the St. George Illawarra Dragons. Shane Flanagan, the head coach, and also their GM, Ben Harran, has departed or mutually departed their roles at the club. Looking at Shane Flanagan's coaching career at the St. George Illawarra Dragons from 2024. He's had 54 games, only won 19, so a 35% win rate. And I think it's just time where the club's, you know, wanting to go in a different direction and try and rebuild that club because it does have some success in its history. But yeah, look, it's just a cutthroat business. It is a results-driven business as well. And, you know, if you're not winning games, there is pressure that comes with this role. So all the best to both Shane Flanagan and also Ben Harran. Yeah, and this is the second coach that's been fired from their role just this year after we're only in round 7 in the NRL, which makes me ask the question, you know, what makes a good NRL coach?
It's a million-dollar question, honestly, because I guess when you think you've got the answer, it's not the answer.
Yeah.
Because I thought the epitome of coaching was someone like Scott Razor Robinson from the Crusaders. You win 7 Super Rugby titles in a row, and then you go and take on the All Blacks. And not he didn't have a poor record, but he gets let go. He still had 2 years left on his contract. But whatever happened there around alignment between him and the players and the organization just was not gelling, and they had to part ways. So, again, when you think of coaches, there has to be connection there, alignment, straight away from top to bottom, like with your GM, with your staff, and with your players. You've got to get that bit right because that's around messaging, key messages.
You've also got to remember as well that, yes, there's the head coach, but there's also assistant coaches. There's a whole team
that coaches
and trains and makes sure that the team, the players, are at the highest level and at an elite level to be able to compete and win games.
Yep.
And if they're not winning, then it always falls back on who's responsible.
What you're saying there, when I spoke, I heard Steve Hansen, the former All Blacks coach, talk about what makes a good coach. He said one of the biggest ones that a coach needs to have is self-awareness. Self-awareness around your leadership style, what that looks like, what you think it looks like when things are going well. So like in preseason when there's no competition points up for grabs, versus what your leadership style looks like under the pump, under the blowtorch.
When the pressure's on.
And if there's inconsistencies within that around your messaging and what you've done and players are hearing one thing but you're doing another, then you don't have that self-awareness and you lose trust, you lose respect and you lose connection if there's inconsistencies with your self-awareness. And the other one is alignment. We just spoke about that from top to bottom. What does that look like? Because if you, again, under pressure, if you have little side chats here and there, you're going sideways with your chats, that's a ripple effect of energy.
I think it's also being able to adapt with today's game and also the playing group of today. You think of the players today to the players 10, 20 years ago, you know, they come through a different time. We've got social media.
Absolutely.
I think the
rule changes is huge. Like
the money involved, the players having to be elite athletes. So there's so much that coaches have to be aware of. And which, you know, when you think of the long-term coaches like Wayne Bennett, Trent Robinson, you know, Craig Bellamy, they've learned to be able to adapt as well. So
what I think though too as well, just before we get to some of the other games, is that those intense style coaches like Flano, Bellamy to a certain degree, but he's been able to evolve his time over his time. But I just think the intense type of coaches are starting to fade out, because what you said before around there's so many distractions, like the pressure is a lot greater now compared to back in the day. So if you're intense the whole time, trying to control every part of the player's life from when they wake up to when they sleep, where do they get an outlet to just let their hair down, be themselves? And you just can't live on that edge the whole time. So I think some of those intense coaches like Flano are starting to fade out, and you're going to get guys like Kieran Foran that will start to step up to the plate. They have a bit of everything. Knowledge. They have a bit of intensity.
Connection.
That connection. So they have to have more of a holistic approach around how they coach.
Nice. Well said, Sammy. Well, let's get into some footy. Round 7. Did you watch any? No, you didn't.
No, I did. I did, mate. Don't try and put me under the blowtorch like that. I was so surprised with all the upsets. Like, I'm thinking, the Bulldogs, okay, they've probably got their season back on track, and then they go and lose to Para. Like, so just stuff like that. And then even the Dolphins.
They were close. I told you, my smoky.
I'm thinking, 18 points to Nui. Here we go. They're just going to run away with it. Then they come back, and it comes down to a field goal. So I just think the nature of this competition is so hard, and you just cannot fall asleep for a second.
Well, the big one for me was the Storm losing now 5 in a row. Canberra Raiders winning this one 26-22. I thought Simi Sasangi, the Samoan Canberra Raiders centre, by far a standout. He had the opening try. He was causing errors through his defence, and he also had a try assist and ran with the ball 230 metres. I just checked. I was hoping that he would be eligible to play for the New South Wales Blues.
Oh, but when did he move over?
I think he might have come over in SG Ball age, which is past the 12, 13 age. But Simi Sasangi, informed player of the NRL this year so far. But the Storm, you know, when have you ever remembered the Storm losing 5 games in a row?
Mate, even when the salary cap thing happened and they were coming last and they were playing for no competition points, they were still winning all their games. So I can't remember a time when they've been in this position, and you spoke about what makes a good coach. I'm so keen to see how the Storm get out of this one with Craig Bellamy, because if he does do that, that's going to tell you what a good coach looks like.
And speaking of standouts, Latrell Mitchell, he was on fire against the Dragons. Latrell scored 4 tries. And then in the other, we had 2 games that finished with 1 point difference. A tight one in Darwin, Northern Territory, where the Panthers, Nathan Cleary, the Iceman, he kicks their field goal in Golden Point, which means the Panthers won that one 23-22 against the Dolphins. I did have the Dolphins as my smoky. I thought they did have a strong comeback, but and Panthers just finding a way to win. But teams that have versed the Panthers this year, only one team has won the following week.
I think I know who that is. The Roosters.
Was it?
Yep. Because we had Connor Watson on that Pacific Sports Show, and he's the one that told me that stat.
Oh, so you mentioned it?
Yeah, he mentioned it.
Okay. Well, what that says is, like, teams are preparing and investing so much energy in trying to beat the Penrith Panthers, but also the amounts of damage the Penrith Panthers do to the other teams, you know, causing
takes its toll,
an impact for the week after. And in the other 1 point difference game, the West Tigers losing to the Brisbane Broncos 21-20. This was played in the southwest of Sydney at Campbelltown. And geez, I think the West Tigers, they looked so good. But when you're coming up against the reigning champions, the Brisbane Broncos, again, just finding a way to win. Tigers, some positive signs. What also was positive signs was the amount of fans that went there.
Packed house.
To support the Tigers. Hey, winning solves everything.
It does, doesn't it? It solves everything.
But we'll cover some games this weekend. I know it's Anzac round, so we'll cover some games this Friday. And that will be me for the Rugby League NRL review.
Bulavinaka. Lotte Tungiri here, and you're listening to Nijin Footy.
Yeah, Bulavinaka. What about the soft tone of Lotte's voice there?
I like it. I like
beautiful.
It. I like how he said Nijin Footy.
Nijin Footy. Hey, it was a big weekend in Super Rugby Pacific, and I'll get to the Drua's big win in a second, but I just want to start with Moana Pacifica. They played against the Waratahs. They went down 29 points to 14. It was actually in front of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
I've seen that on socials.
They were there because I think the connection with the Waratahs assistant coach is Mike Catt, played for England in that 2003 World Cup winning final. And so that was a connection there to get him to the game. But anyway, it didn't help Moana, that's for sure. But this was a special occasion. It was an emotional week for Moana, but a special occasion because that Pacific Sports Show that I co-host with Tiana Penatani, we did a feature story on Patrick Pellegrini, my cousin, the fly half. So we had a bit of a build-up to the game. We met at his family home, and then we had like pigs, big feed, otter. Unbelievable. The cousins were there as well. They got their posters ready. We did a couple of interviews as well because I guess where it all started for the Katoa last name was through my uncle Lonnie, and he was the first one to represent Tonga back in 96 and actually captained Tonga back in 96 as well. So the legacy from him and what he's passed down. There's been a long line of our family members that have gone on to play test footy. So it was pretty cool to touch on those moments with our family. And then we made our way to the game. And there was about 40 to 50 of us in the stand with all the banners. And you could see when Patrick ran out of the tunnel, he spotted us straight away. Just that little smirk. And it feels a bit more. You've played in front of family before. Like, you know, what is that feeling like, you know, when you notice some family members in the crowd?
Yeah, emotional, but you get this sense of like rush inside. You're like, oh, my family's here.
Family's
like,
here.
You know, where the goosebumps come in. Yeah. And yeah, it's a good feeling. And it's one where you feel like you've made them proud as well. So I'm guessing that he would have got them feelings.
You know, they didn't get the win, but it was so emotional seeing Patrick walk towards the family after the game, towards the fence, hugging, tears flowing. Just, yeah, he couldn't even really get his words out to describe how much it meant to him. For all of us to be there for the very first time, probably like all of us there to watch him play.
And that's what the Moana is about, you know, creating their memories, them opportunities, families come together. And hopefully, you know, when is this going to be released on that Pacific Sports Show?
It's a great point you brought up because that's what this team is about. It's beyond the game. It is those stories of family coming together and supporting their team. It's the people's team. And
Miracle Failangi's story as well.
Bro, unbelievable. And so what he said after the game was so spot on. Like,
who, Miracle?
Miracle. So after the game, Miracle was interviewed by the great Justin Harrison. And he said to Justin, you know, after the game, he goes, you know, our job here at Moana is to inspire players back in the islands who come from nothing to something. That's what it's about. Just hearing those words and actually and actually have been to his village in Vailele and see it is coming from nothing and then making something of yourself to then inspire kids on the islands.
And he's speaking from experience.
From experience, from the heart.
He's been there. He's gone through that pathway.
Absolutely. And you can't take this team away from the people. Honestly, do something. I'm pleading. I don't know what the business model is.
But why don't we go do stories on every single one of their players?
We've got to pull on those heartstrings.
And we just... yeah, get the background, get the journey, get the connection from the families, the meaning, the value that they add to their people, and show how much of the investment, like it might not be financially, but what it does have in return.
There's got to be something out there.
There's something special that's more special than financial return.
Like, look, I don't know when the news will come out, when it's officially going to happen. But hopefully there's still a slight bit of hope when Moana can still be in the competition for next year.
Let's make some noise, people.
Make some noise. Let's get out there. Get on socials. Here we go. And I tell you, a team that did make some noise, and I believe this was a big win for the Pacific, was the Fijian Drua.
This should have been the moment of the week.
Nah, I wanted to save it because my moment was better of coaching. No, it's not. But, man, what a game. And honestly, if you had have just turned on the TV at full time and just tuned into this Brumbies Drua game, you would have thought it was a grand final.
The celebrations?
The celebrations.
Where was this game played?
In Canberra. So this is the first time in 3 years the Drua have won away from home. It's like a 7.5%
win. They haven't won away from home.
In 3 years.
In 3 years.
Round one, 2023.
And Canberra's
Warner.
Not an easy place to go.
No, not at all. And they go and get the job done.
Would that be similar to winning a game in Auckland or Eden Park?
Yes, it would have been. For like, yeah, absolutely it would have been. So that, what did they win? 33 points to 28. They came out the gates and put on a really good performance that they should be very proud of. And it was a tough week for them as well because they lost their coach won't be re-signed. Their assistant coach is signed overseas. So they had to gel together and prepare well for this week. I thought they put in a performance for the Pacific.
What actions could you see where you're like, oh, these boys are on?
They scrambled really well in those moments of chaos. They still won collisions. They had good numbers on their feet. So the two tacklers that were going in there, they were doing a job, but they were getting to their feet really early, having those second efforts. And so those numbers on their feet. So even though the Brumbies were making some line breaks, they're solved to get back behind the ball. There was numbers there to be able to go again.
And that, so does that mean all of them were getting back on?
All of them were getting. So that reaction, the right attitude. Reaction when it's not going your way.
The urgency.
The urgency to make sure that, okay, yep, that's plays happen. We let in, say, we gave up a clean line break, but what's next? What's the next job?
They already quickly go to the next job.
That's what that was really noticeable for me, that they were able to get to the next job quick and solve fast. So I thought that was awesome.
Were they always in the lead of this game?
Yeah, they were up at halftime. They just played with freedom. Like Vakatawa, again, we spoke about him last week, just playing well, winning collisions, but also having those second touches. All players just knew their role.
And where is the Brumbies seated on the ladder?
I believe before that game, they were in the top four. To be honest, actually, they've actually won better away from home than in Canberra. But it is such a tough place to win.
Better would have been cold too.
There were some beanies in the crowd.
The temperature here in Sydney is starting to drop.
It is, and man.
In Canberra, when it's about, say in Sydney, if it's 10 degrees, in Canberra, it's 2 degrees.
Exactly. But I guess the pleasing thing, and this is a big one, 2 weeks in a row, and you talked about what was noticeable, they played the whole 80. In possession, 80th minute, they give away another penalty. So the Brumbies get the ball back to then kick for the line out. And I said the Force were top five with line outs and mauling and being their strong point. Well, the Brumbies are even better. And so when they kicked it to the line, I had a bit of hope because Tane Edmund, he should have got towards the 5 meter mark for that line out more. That's a different story, but he doesn't. Mate, it only goes about 10 metres, so it's just outside the 22. So it's like, that was a good sign. I was like, oh, okay.
Fiji go up for it?
They tried to. They missed it. And this is the level that they've gone to now. When you don't get to contest, you have to transition and think, okay, I need to go next job, which
rush
is more.
Yeah.
And get through that seam and break that seam so they can't get forward and get momentum. And they did that, got through, collapsed more, ball was trapped. And what that means, when it's unplayable, it's game over. The Drua get the job done and win that game. Celebrations all around. So I know that Sean Maloney, their commentator, said it was the biggest upset in Super Rugby history. It was big, but it wasn't that big.
Ooh,
it was very good.
Salty. Who's the biggest one then?
Oh, mate, when I was playing for the Sunwolves.
Oh, there you go.
It's all the games I played in when we won. They were massive upsets. Well, we weren't expected to win.
Get it. Stay listening, because we do have Will Guinea joining us right now, and you don't want to miss this chat. I guarantee you, you'll be leaving with a smile.
Kia ora, my name is Kiana Takairangi, and you are listening to Nation Footy.
Man, T, I'm honestly looking forward to this chat. Like, I've been able to share the field with this bloke many times in the same team, and him being on the opposition and winning plenty of times over me, that's for sure. But I don't know if many people would believe me if I told you one of the greatest halfbacks of all time, with over 100 caps for the Wallabies, captained the Wallabies, won a super title with the Reds in 2011, Super Rugby Player of the Year 2011 and 2012, started his journey in Papua New Guinea, born and raised there, didn't play competitive sport as a kid, grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, dreamed of being a pro cricketer, didn't play rugby until he moved to Brisbane, didn't even play halfback straight away. But yet he achieved such greatness, and it is my pleasure to welcome the great man, Willie Genya. Welcome to Nijin Footy, brother.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate the intro. You know more about me than I do about myself.
Brother, I was searching up some stuff yesterday and I came across a couple of videos. So I got some information from the What a Lad podcast, but also I was feeling good about myself. I was benching 50 kilo dumbbells the other day for 10 and I saw that you got the 60s up for 8. Like, you're in good shape still, bro. How good is that?
Yeah, bro, it's good, man. Like, I've been fortunate. I've played footy professionally for 20 years and I think it teaches you a lot of things, and one of them is to stay healthy, and it puts you in a good routine around health and fitness. And yeah, it's just something that as I've gotten older, it brings me peace, it brings me joy and happiness. So yeah, man, I just try to stay as fit as I can.
60 kilo dumbbells. Now, how good's that?
Did you catch Sammy on his Insta trying to post them 50 kilo dumbbells? I mean, did you get 10?
I got 10, but that's what I was saying, man. I can't catch up to this, man. Oh, man, how good. But let's take it right back. Born in PNG, whereabouts is your province in PNG?
So I'm from Central Province. I was born in Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea, to my parents, Elizabeth and Kilroy. My parents are my heroes, you know. They were born, bred in Papua New Guinea. They lived in the villages. You know, we come from Abau, which is about a 4-5 hour drive from Port Moresby. They grew up there. One of 8 siblings in their family grew up in the villages, you know. Had to walk 20 k's to school, barefoot, ride bikes to school, 20 kilometers, you know. Did stuff like the hard way, you know, like the tough way. And so we had humble beginnings and humble upbringings. You know, like for me, I've got 5 siblings in my family, and I always say to my sisters who were younger, they had a very different upbringing because my parents are incredibly hardworking people. But around when, you know, myself and my older brother were born and were growing up, you know, we didn't have a lot. We were always provided for, but we spent a lot of time living with, you know, relatives and sharing households and things of that nature, things like that. And so my upbringing was very much connected to culture, to people, to community. And it's been the most amazing thing for me because it's certainly shaped my life as far as what I place importance on around people.
Mm. What was your favorite moments, you know, growing up in PNG as a young kid?
Honestly, man, it was every time we could go spend time in the village. It was such a big part of my life. Was every time we'd have school holidays, we'd be back there. Long weekends, we'd be back there. Some of my great memories are going fishing with my old man and my older brother, and just spending time like with my family. Like we grew up with my cousins being like brothers and sisters, my aunts and uncles being like, you know, second mums and second dads. And I think that's the biggest thing about what I've taken from my upbringing, but also my culture, is it's about people, it's about connection through, you know, food, through dance, through song, through, you know, things that are important to us and our lifestyle back home.
I know Willie G as a fierce competitor on the field and trained very hard, and obviously that's why you got to where you got to, but what was Willie G like as a kid in those villages though?
Mate, I was always competitive, I tell you. I was always competitive with my brothers. I was always competitive in anything that I did. I loved being outside. I just loved, whether it was riding bikes or going for walks, playing backyard cricket, playing sport, going to the river to swim, the beaches. I think the more I grew up, when we spent more time, I guess, in Moresby because of school, or played a whole lot of backyard sport, like a lot of backyard cricket, basketball. We weren't allowed to play sports on Saturdays because we were seven-day advances. So Sabbath for us would start 6 p.m. Friday and finish 6 p.m. Saturday. So we weren't able to play any sports. So we would make up for it by literally every afternoon playing as much competitive sport with each other as we could. And yeah, I was, you know me, man, I was a bit of a smart ass. I was cheeky, like competitive. And I think I've been like that my whole life, really.
Any rugby league?
Nah, man. We grew up watching rugby league. I was a New South Wales supporter, actually. I'm ashamed to say it now, but
I was a New South Wales. I didn't know that.
Come on, man, up the Blues.
Yeah, up the Blues. Nah, Joey Johns was one of my favorite players, but Brad Queenslander now, I'll say. But yeah, we watched a lot of rugby league, a lot of cricket. But the funny thing is, I didn't know that rugby union as a sport existed. I had no idea in the world. I just knew rugby league, cricket, basketball, soccer. I wasn't introduced to rugby until I went to BBC in Brisbane.
You probably answered my question. I was going to ask you, as a young kid growing up in PNG, would you ever think that you would achieve the things you have done in rugby union? But you know, if you didn't know rugby union even existed, yeah, then that wasn't possible. So when was that moment where you thought, okay, I could achieve the things or had the dreams to become a Wallaby and be a successful rugby union player?
That's a great question. I tell people the truth about it all the time is when I started playing rugby at school, I just loved it. I loved the game. I loved the sport. I loved the competitive aspect of it because as a competitive kid growing up who never played sport in organized competition, like to then be at BBC and playing the game, I was like, this is the best thing ever. Like it's got rules, it's refereed, I'm with my teammates. And naturally, I was quite good at it, but I just loved playing the game. And through that, I guess I progressed through age group teams. But I didn't even think about it as something that I could do professionally. I remember I had a guy called Chris Lane who, you know, he played a huge role as far as being able to make it into the professional ranks. He was my first 15 coach. We were driving back, I think he would drop me off from training. And we were driving back and he said, you know, you can actually make something of this. You can make this a career. And I looked at him in the offside. I was sitting offside. I laughed at him. I was like, what are you talking about? He said, no, mate, like just, like have a think about it. And then because he was a Colts coach as well at Jeeps. He said, when you finish at the end of this year, I want you to come to Jeeps and we'll do some work. You know, you've obviously made age group teams. I didn't make Aussie schoolboys, but he said, you've made age group teams. And I definitely see something in you. So come, just give me next year. We'll do some work together and we'll see where it goes. And that sort of planted the seed, I guess. And I said, well, what else can I do? I'll just give it a go. I'll trust him. And I guess it flowed on from there, yeah.
Well, good. At the time of you being a halfback, so we're the same age. So the schoolboy stuff and I guess the person that was in Willie's position was like, the next big thing to take over, George Gregan, Joshy Holmes. And then you had the Australian schoolboy halfbacks coming through. So he probably wasn't on anyone's radar. But what was it What was it that Chrissy Lane saw? Have you asked him that? Like that, for him to believe so much in you to go to that next level, what did he see?
I haven't asked him. It's a great question. I should ask him. But I think he just believed in me. Like he saw that I had skill, I had talent, I had ability. But beyond, so at schoolboy level and at the age group level, like what you see a lot of is athleticism. More than anything else. And then the bigger the guys are, the faster they are, the stronger they are, they just outshine everyone. I think what he saw in me was just skill and rugby IQ, the ability to be able to understand space and do things and create space and create opportunities for guys around me. And I think that's what he was in his mind. That's what will allow you to transfer to the professional ranks. You know, like you see a lot of young kids that come through that are incredibly talented from a physical ability standpoint, but they don't necessarily have the mentality or the skills or the intangible stuff that translates into the professional part of the game. And so I think we've had brief conversations, but it'd be an interesting one to have with him now. But I think that's what he saw in me. And yeah, like you're right, like I was also very lucky, you know, like I had those two Musi Tusitala was
yes, from Melbourne. Yep.
Yeah, from Melbourne, who had Nathan Siebert, who were I remember their names because they were on my list.
On the hit list.
they're on the list. And so they both got injured leading into the Aussie 19s trial. So they were supposed to be there instead of me. So I think Nathan broke his leg and Marcy must have done something similar. And Phil Mooney at the time called me up and he said, look, these two are injured. Do you want to come along for the trial in Manly, Institute of Sport, whatever it is?
I think that was the one, our first trial in that at Warringah. Yeah. I remember that game.
That's the one.
I remember that game. That's was so one. Hot out there. So that was the first sort of trial for the boys for Aussie 19s. And then
the one, bro. And so I remember going there thinking, all right, I'm here because of accident, you know, like, but I'm gonna do everything I can to make the most of this because it could be an opportunity to move further from a career aspect to make this a professional thing. And so I went there, trained well, played well, eventually got selected. But then as you're saying, like I had Josh Holmes in front of me. He was a good player at the age group level. Like we won the 2006 under 19 World Cup and he was IRB under 19 player of the year.
So, you know, that's 20 years ago today. That's when we won that under 19s World Cup. So our 10 was Christian Liliuofano. We had the Faingata twins. On the other side for the baby All Blacks, whatever they called, they had Victor Vito. Was at number eight, so the Hurricanes. So, like, it was a star-studded sides, really, you know, in that when Josh Holmes was starting. So what were you doing when you knew that you weren't getting much game time? Like, how were you approaching that tournament?
Just to be a good teammate. And, like, I'm competitive. So, like, I would always think to myself, just be as prepared as you can so that when you do get an opportunity, you're ready. So, like, remember, we had all these things that they told us about what it would be like in Dubai with the heat. And so they said, go do runs or train at like 1 o'clock during the day so that you can get accustomed to the heat. So, man, I was doing that stuff. Like I was at 1 o'clock when it was bloody hot and brizzy. Like I'm out there doing like 3, 4, 5K runs, again, knowing that I'm not necessarily going to play as much because Josh is a starting outback. But again, it was just that mentality of, okay, well, if I do get an opportunity, I need to be ready, because it's the right thing to do for the team, but also from an individual sense, it's like, it's my opportunity. And cool. So I didn't play much. Played one game against Romania and then 20 minutes off the bench, I think, or 15 minutes off the bench against France in the semi-final. But I was very much accustomed to sitting on that bench watching Josh absolutely carve up.
I love that, the work that you put in when no one's watching, and also just being ready when you get that opportunity. It's a great lesson there for all our young listeners. I'll probably jump the gun a little bit in regards to your journey, but what was your experience like when first moving from PNG and then coming over to Australia and with the culture differences?
Yeah, it was a bit hard to tell you the truth. Like I said, a lot of my upbringing was just around family. And so I went over as a boarder in year seven, so I was 12 years old. So to be, you know, thrust into an environment where, again, culturally it's very different. You're seeing different people. People speak a different way. It's different foods, all that type of stuff. But I was also very blessed and very lucky that, like, my mates were really good mates. I had country boys. I was real good mates with a lot of country boys. And so, like, being a boarder, like, it can be difficult, but I saw it the other way. I was very lucky that we were all young. We were 12 years old. So, like, in being away and separated and isolated from our parents, we were bonded through that, you know? So, like, they were country boys. They're away from their parents and, like, their comforts and things that they were used to, very similar to me. And so, look, we bonded over things like that, and it allowed me to adjust, I guess, quite quickly.
We had Aiden Toa on not that long ago. I think it was last year. We've also interviewed Archie Thompson as well. And when I spoke to them about their PNG culture and coming here to Australia, sometimes they said they felt like they lost their connection to PNG a little bit, you know, because they're trying to fit in with what's happening here in Australia. And as they got older, it's like they realized, you know, that longing for connecting back to their family and their culture, especially when they went back to the motherland. What was that experience like for yourself, you know, moving over and being disconnected from, say, family and keeping your PNG culture?
I've never felt disconnected from my culture. Like I said, in terms of my upbringing, like, we were brought up within culture, again, in the sense of it was just about people and community. And I love my family. Like, I love my family dearly. And for me, again, our culture, like, obviously within culture, you have tradition, you have, like, again, song, dance, you have ways of life and ways of doing things. But it comes back to me being about people. And I've never been disconnected from the people that are important in my life. And I think through that, I've been able to maintain that connection, because whenever I go home, like, I'll go back to the village. Whenever I go home, like, I'm a pretty simple dude. I like being at grassroots. I like going down to club footy and being on the road, walking places. I like going back home to the village. I like doing simple things that I've always liked doing. And I think, you know, my family is a real big part of that connection. Yeah, again, I played professionally for 20 years and traveled all over the world. I wouldn't say you lose the connection, but you're removed from it in a sense, because you're just, again, all in different parts of the world. But I always felt connected to it through my family. You know, my mum and dad still live there. My brother lives there with his kids. I feel more at home than I do anywhere when I'm back there. And so that longing, I guess, has always felt like it kept me connected through my family.
Man, I love that. And we're going to talk a little bit more back after we sort of have a dive into your career. But after that 19s tour, you come back and it's within probably, I don't know, maybe 12 months, you're making your debut for the Reds. And again, we had Eddie Jones on not long ago. What did Eddie say?
So we got two good friends of ours that run our co-host Nija Daly, and they said, ask Eddie if he really called Willie G that little fat bloke. I asked him and he just started smiling. He goes, yep, I sure did.
I sure did. But mate, what was it like being, like, you know, again, from not really being, you know, considered, you know, to be playing Super Rugby, but then to be thrusted into the Reds, but then also under the eye of Eddie Jones?
Yeah, I look back, man, and it's a funny story. It's a cool story, but I learned so much from it. I remember, so I'd come back from that Aussie 19 trip and I was just playing club footy. I was playing Colts footy. And then I played the Queensland Under 19s tournament and we played against Canterbury, Otago, and I played really well. And I remember Eddie Jones, he never called me a little fat bloke to my face, but what I heard was, not that I'd do anything if he did. He could tell me that now and be like, yes.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah.
You're right, Eddie. Yeah, sweet. But no, I was playing at Ballymore. We were playing the Otago side, and I played really well. Like, I had a good game. And then the story came back that he was like, who's that little fat bloke. He's pretty good. He's a bit unfit, but he's pretty good. And then so I think he'd noticed me from there, and then I'd been offered an academy deal to train with the academy. And I think the first day we started was the 1st of November. And I'm walking into training, like I drove into training, parked my car, and as I'm walking, I get a call from the Reds manager, said, look, you're training with the top squad now. And I was like, what? What do you mean? And then he told me, oh, Sam Cordingley's injured. He's done his Les Frank. He's out for 12 months. And so I'm like, so what do? I was just about to walk to like the change rooms, which I don't even know where they were at that time, and grab like my gear. He's like, oh, I'll meet you at the gate. Met me at the gate, gave me the actual proper Reds kit. You know, as an 18-year-old kid, you're like, what? Well, I don't know what to do with this. Am I wearing the actual gear? And then, man, I went down to training. I just jumped in, introduced everyone, blah, blah, blah. Started training. And bro, after the first 5 minutes, I was blowing. Like I was blowing. And Eddie looked at me and laughed and he goes, this is just a warm-up, mate. You all right? I was like, oh, this is just a warm-up. I don't think I'm going to make it. But Eddie was amazing for me at the start of my career because I love that he was so honest and so hard on guys around hard work. You know, what I got from him was that before you become a professional player, you have to learn how to train like a professional player. And so he instilled really positive habits around extras, around being in really peak condition to be able to play the game the way that you want to play it. And so for me anyway, you couldn't help but want to do extras. You couldn't help but want to work on your skills. You couldn't help but want to work on your fitness and your conditioning. And so like, you know, for me, like I said, I walked in there on that day. Yeah, I was pretty buggered after that first warm-up. But I remember I went home that night and I thought to myself, okay, this is the opportunity that I've been wanting the whole time. Like, this is it. So like, I can go either two ways. I can do everything I possibly can to make the most of it. And if it lasts a year, if it lasts 2 years, if it lasts 3 years, I'll be happy with that. I'm completely fine with that because I did everything I could. So I committed to that, you know? And so like I'd have days where I spoke about Chris Lane before, like the lights would be off at Ballymore down at club footy and like we'd be passing balls using car lights. You know, I'd go down to like the field near my house with a bag of balls, turn the car lights on and just pass it towards the post. I'd do extra fitness sessions by myself in the dark. And I guess I could take credit for that, but I do feel like Eddie was definitely someone who instilled the idea of that hard work and that work ethic. And that was something that was consistent, I guess, over the course of my career, which allowed me to have some success.
I forgot to mention, following Eddie's answer, he did say, but he did bloody work hard.
Yeah.
He
did
say that. Well, the thing is, man, like Eddie was the type of guy you could have not work hard. If you didn't, he would get rid of you. We were on the field one day and he goes, boys, you think training's hard? Do you think training's hard? Was like, yeah, we're pretty cooked. He goes, there's a balcony up there. If you want to have a rest, coffee on me. Go up there, have a rest. Have the day off and come back down and you can start training tomorrow. We were like, mate, if anyone goes up there and has a coffee, they're not coming back.
They're not
coming back tomorrow. You're not coming back tomorrow. You're out of here.
Man, I reached out to Diggers and I said, mate, have you got an Eddie story for him? He goes, yeah, he made me carry a footy for 6 weeks straight or something, like breakfast, lunch and dinner, so I wouldn't drop a ball.
Yeah, because Digby kept dropping the ball. But it was the same thing. Like, Digby built that habit based on like Eddie. It's a funny story, but he built that habit off Eddie and how he was and how we do things like that. But it never changed for Diggers. Like his whole career, like he would have a ball on him. And like we would tell him he can't kick. So after training, and he couldn't kick, he still couldn't kick, but it wouldn't stop him from like spending hours and hours and hours on it. Again, like, yeah, like you're very fortunate, man. I feel like in these environments where sometimes you come across people that allow you to take advantage of your situation and circumstance. And I think for me, like I was a good player. I feel like I had talent. But I was also very blessed, you know, to have people in my life that allowed me to maximize my potential and create circumstances within my situations to do so. And Eddie was certainly one of those people.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, you make your debut for the Wallabies. So you're killing it for the Reds. You make your debut for the Wallabies. And especially within Pacific Island culture, you don't just make your debut. It's your mum and your dad. It's your brother. It's your village.
It's the whole of PNG.
It's the whole of PNG. That's what I'm thinking of. And I've been over there last year, and they are rugby league mad. And watching some of the games, watching the energy that they have watching rugby league, it's phenomenal. For yourself making your debut, you know, what did that mean to you to be able to not only represent yourself being out there, but pretty much represent your whole family in the whole of PNG?
I think it was more representing my family first because my parents are my heroes again, and the sacrifices they made to give us the opportunities that we had. And I finished school and I remember saying to them, can you just give me a year with Chris Land to see if I can make something of this? And my parents said, yeah, we'll look after you for a year and you see if you can make it. And so making that debut for Australia, like so special for me, but more so for my family, and particularly my parents. Yeah, like, man, like, I was a boarder at BBC. They'd fly down every second week to come watch me play. You know, they'd make sure we had footy boots. They'd make sure we could get to, like, rugby competitions and rugby trainings and sessions like that. So it was really special. And then obviously also to represent Papua New Guinea, I think at that stage we'd had Michael Bond, who was a Papua New Guinean who'd played for the Wallabies, and that'd be a Papua New Guinean that, again, represented Australia but represented my heritage as well. Yeah, that was a special feeling to know that you could be someone that could that kids could look up to, and you could have an impact, and think that you can allow kids to create that story in their head of, oh, I can actually do this too. You know, I can, if one of us can get there and make it, I can too. And so probably more so in hindsight, that's a pretty special part to think about, because you guys know what it's like. I was 21, like, making my debut. I was like, oh, this is the best thing ever. Yeah, in the immediate, you're thinking about your parents, you're thinking about people in your close circle that have allowed you to get there. But yeah, more in hindsight, it's, you realize the impact that you've been able to have on people to be able to create a pathway that's real, because one of them has made it.
And what was it like the first time you went back to Papua New Guinea after you started playing for the Wallabies?
Yeah, but the funny thing is that, like, it's, they don't watch rugby.
Oh, so it was, like, just a normal day. So they didn't pack out the airport like David Mead and all those players.
No, mate, nothing like that. But I wouldn't like that anyway. I'm not that type of dude, you know. So I think when it started to become a thing where people would give you some sense of recognition was we'd won in 2011 the Super Rugby final. And then I played for the World Cup at the Rugby World Cup and captained Australia in 2011. And I think by that stage, I sort of established myself as a mainstay in the team and as someone who was, you know, a driver in the team. So, like, I think from then on, I started to get, I guess, a sense of recognition back home in PNG. Again, not big or not all that type of, it makes me uncomfortable. Not that all those types of things like the rugby league players get, but you started to get noticed a little bit. And like I said, it was a cool thing more so to be an example for kids that, yeah, rugby league's there, other sports are there, but, you know, one of us can also do this in rugby union. That could be an opportunity as well.
Yeah, I guarantee you that kids in from your village would, you would have given that bit of inspiration and hope just by representing that jersey, but knowing that you walked the same streets and, you know, played the same sports that they did in their village. Me and Sammy, we talk about, you know, throughout our career, some of the tough times that you go through, but more so the lessons that we get to learn from those bits of adversity or that journey. Can you share maybe the, you know, one moment or the toughest moment during your playing career and, you know, some of those takeaways or lessons that you learned from it?
Oh, that's a good question. There's a number of tough things that you go through. You know, I played for a long time, so you deal with the ups and downs of selection, you deal with the ups and downs of being in and out of teams, you deal with the ups and downs of, like, personal things off the field that impact you as a person, but also impact your performances on the field. I think one of the biggest lessons I've taken from my career as a player was the importance of discipline and separating discipline from motivation. You know, motivation for me, you can feel good today and want to go do something, but then if you base solely what you do on motivation, what do you do when you don't feel good? You know, what do you just not do it then? Or do you not do it with the same intent or same effort? So one of the biggest learnings for me is importance of discipline. And that's a hard thing because discipline is doing things that you're supposed to do or you say that you'll do all the time, regardless of how you feel. But in order to get there, it's about making those tough choices consistently to the point where they stop becoming choices and they become habit and they become behavior and they become lifestyle. And so over the course of my career, what I'm very fortunate and blessed to have done is develop discipline through making those tough choices constantly, consistently, to the point where it's become habit, it's become lifestyle, and it's just not a choice anymore. It's like, Wyxie, you brought it up at the start, like still in the gym and staying strong and staying fit. It's a discipline. It's because over the course of my career, you constantly make those choices to just keep turning up and doing and doing and doing. Like, I went for a run this morning. I don't feel good at all. Like, in my head, I'm like, man, my knees hurt, my back hurts. But then in, like, a moment, you're like, oh, I'm on the road, I'm about to run, because it's discipline. And so, I mean, without getting into anything specific about certain moments and details, I think discipline is the biggest thing that I've learned in my career that is transferable now into my life outside of footy, just as a man wanting to walk through life.
I love that, bro. Man, that's the chat.
110%, you know, like, discipline stacks the odds in your favour when it probably hasn't fallen in your favor when you when you're overlooked or when the next big thing's in front of you, or all those type of things. So that discipline keeps you on track. So I absolutely love that.
I'll say one more thing as well. I think preparation. I get asked by like the players here in Japan, but also young kids, and they say, "Oh, what's one thing that I can do, you know, that you did that's really important?" And I say preparation. Like always, focus on your training, focus on your preparation, because that's what you fall back on in games. That's what you fall back on when things get hard. And more often than not, you see the best players, their focus is purely on the week in terms of their preparation, in terms of all the work they put in. And then come Saturday, come game day, whenever it is, your output is essentially just an expression of your preparation. You know, what I found was you live with the result. If you play well, you don't play well, you win, you lose. Well, I did everything I could to be able to give myself a chance to play well. I can live with the result. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I did want to get to yourself and Quaidy quickly. You know, you've played a lot of footy together, won plenty of games together. You guys are winners. I know what it's like to play in Japan in Div 2 teams, and you come up against Div 1 teams and you cop a hiding. How did you handle those losses in there? Because I can only imagine you hate losing. Yeah, bro. You hate losing. So bro, how did you go with that?
Bro, so when I first came here, it was after the 2019 World Cup, and I came here and we were playing Div 2, and we're beating teams by like 80, 90 points. Like, we'd be during games, I'd be like, Q, let me goal kick. And then I'd be goal kicking left-footed. Like, we're just, yeah. But then, bro, we got promoted. We were getting beaten by like 80, 90 points. And I was like, all right, man, like what's going on? But again, like in terms of dealing with those losses, it comes back to discipline, man. It comes back to preparation. It sucks. It's the worst thing, losing and not feeling like you're competing. But you can be content with the result if you know you've done the work. Because mentally, you think you know that, well, yeah, okay, we lost and we lost by this, but I gave myself every opportunity to play well. And I think that's been the challenge here. When I was playing and even now coaching, is teaching guys those habits, because it's very much ingrained in us back home in professional sporting teams because of the nature of high performance and, you know, the level of what high performance is back home. But it's probably not at that level here.
Motivated me to one turn my ice bath on to jump on it when I get home. But also get
I've changed my coaching speech when I go coach Sydney Uni this afternoon.
I've already put my notes down for my under-16s team tomorrow. So
yeah, perfect
preparation
and discipline. Awesome, Willie G. Man, I honestly wish we could chat for hours and go through more of your story. But I just want to say I really appreciate you jumping on, man. This goes out to a lot of people that will take a lot from this. You're doing some amazing things, and hopefully we get to cross paths in PNG sometime. I'm not playing on any of those footy fields. There's no chance over there. Dreaming, but yeah, I'd love to cross paths with you again at some point, bro. Much love.
No, I appreciate it, man. I also just want to give thanks to God, man. I've been blessed with the talents and the abilities that He's given me, but also blessed with the people that I've had in my life that have allowed me to do the things that I've done. And so, all glory to God, man.
Much love, brother. Appreciate that, bro.
Sweet.
Oh, what are you doing, man?
Give me three answers for this one.
Yes, it is the end of the show, but before we finish, we're going to go to Gimme Three. This is our game of categories, and I feel like I've been bringing the fun questions.
Yes, you have, Sammy.
And hopefully it continues the same way with my friend over here, but I'm absolutely getting a hide in here on Gimme Three. It is 15 points to 9, and I need to catch up very soon, so I need 3 from 3 here just to try and get something out of this.
What's the winner getting again? A jersey, eh?
Yeah, something.
Key. Nah, it's a jersey. It's a jersey.
Something that we probably won't commit to.
No, we will commit to it. We will commit to it. I've got a fun one for you.
Perfect.
Give me 3 planets that are larger than Earth.
Okay. Saturn.
Saturn is one.
Saturn is one.
Is that the only planet you know?
Nah, I know Pluto's obviously not one. Jupiter.
Jupiter. Jupiter's the largest.
Yes,
stop Jupiter. Whispering over there, Professor Phil.
No, I knew that.
I have a feeling you're going to say this
Mars.
One. I knew you were going to say Mars, and I was even going to say, what about a chocolate bar trying to throw you off? But nah, Mars isn't larger than Earth.
I thought so. Is it Uranus?
Uranus and Neptune.
I just want to keep saying Uranus.
And Neptune.
Oh, Neptune.
Yes.
There we go. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, two from three. I love that tea.
Did you like it?
I do. It changes it up. I've got a good one for next week. I've been thinking ahead. So you're like next week's one. I'm keen for this, my friend. But that
wrap the show up.
Is our time up. Phoenician Footy Mondays. Make sure you find us wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website. And make sure you tune in this Friday because we we'll be back again for Nisian Footy Fridays.
Ka kite, have a great week. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.